We need one more for quorum.
Now you got 2 more minutes. Maybe not.
I believe I did receive an email from Eric Andreessen, so he should be joining us. So we should have the quorum. I think you could begin.
Do we have a quorum?
I believe so. Would you like me to take roll call after you call them?
Yes, please. Let me call the meeting to order.
Thank you.
And this is the special meeting of the advisory committee on February 2nd. And will you take a roll call?
Yes. Let's see. Chair Brennan.
Here.
Committee member Copeland.
Here.
Committee member Hatchett.
Here.
Thank you. Committee member Andreessen.
Here.
Committee member Mack. Committee member McClooney.
Present.
Thank you. Committee member Rock. She has contacted us and she's traveling. She will not be able to attend. Committee member Smith, absent. He contacted us and he is traveling with poor internet connection. Committee member Storm. Committee member Storm. I don't hear you. I see your, okay, I'll go ahead. Committee member Throw. He is absent. He has contacted us. He has a family issue. Committee member Swint. Committee member Turley.
Here.
Thank you. Committee member Storm. Committee member Storm, can you respond, please? We need you today. Is he away? Committee member Storm, are you there? Right now we have 6. We do need 7. And the 7th member would be committee member Storm. Committee member Storm? Hello?
You have a phone number for him? Maybe we call him.
Oh, we have another committee. Committee member Mack.
I'm here. Sorry.
No, no problem. We need you today. Thank you. We have quorum.
Thank you, David, for saving the meeting here.
Sorry, everyone. I was on another work meeting that ran long.
Okay. We need to receive a report on the status of AB 361. Richard?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. As provided for under AB 361, we are able to meet by teleconference. And I'll have more on this later about future meetings, but for this meeting, we need a recommendation and approval to comply with the requirements of 361, which are one, that there's a governor's proclamation of emergency due to COVID-19, and two, that the health officer for Monterey County still recommends that public meetings practice social distancing where possible.
So moved.
A motion's in order to make the findings necessary for the AB 361. May I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to make those findings and continue virtual meetings.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there discussion? Are there comments from the public? If not, back to the committee. Would you poll the board? Committee? You're muted.
There we go. Sorry about that. Committee member Andreessen.
Yes.
Thank you. Committee member Copeland.
Yes.
Committee member Hatchett.
Yes.
Chair Brennan.
Yes.
Committee member Mack.
Yes.
Committee member McClooney.
Yes.
Committee member Turley.
Yes.
Committee member Storm, have you joined us? Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Approve unanimously.
Thank you. Before we go on to the consideration of the summary of actions, Richard, it's my understanding that our next meeting will be in person.
That is correct, and I'll have more information in my report on that. But we will still have a hybrid component where the public can join us virtually.
Great. The next item is accept and file summary of actions for the advisory committee special meeting of December 1. Are there any comments or corrections to the summary? If not, we will accept and file the summary, and we will adjourn to the regular meeting. This is the regular advisory committee meeting of February 2nd. I'm calling the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Will do. Chair Brennan.
Here.
Committee member Mack.
Here.
Committee member Andreessen.
Here.
Committee member Hatchett.
Here.
Committee member Copeland.
Here.
Committee member McClooney.
Present.
Committee member Rock. Committee member Smith. Absent. Committee member Stroh. Absent. Committee member Swint. Committee member Turley.
Here.
Committee member Storm. Committee member Storm. Okay, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You have quorum today.
Thank you. We'll go on to nominations and elections of the 2023 committee chair and vice chair. Currently, I'm the chair and Alan Stroh is the vice chair. So nominations are in order for the chair.
I'll nominate you, Janet, for the chair. This is Sandy Copeland.
Is there a second to that nomination?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations? Okay, please poll the board. You're on mute.
Very good. So there we go. Committee member Andreessen.
Yes.
Committee member Turley.
Yes.
Committee member, McClooney.
Yes.
Committee member Mack.
Yes.
Committee member Copeland.
Yeah, yes.
Committee, thank you. Committee member Hatchett.
Yes.
Chair Brennan.
Yes.
Committee member Storm, have you joined us? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, approving unanimously.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your election for another year. I was going to recommend Alan since he has done it in the past, but he's not here. So.
Madam Chair, if I may, I did speak with Alan, and if he said no one was interested in becoming vice chair, he would assume that role again. So you'd have to vote him in, but he's available for vice chair.
Is there a nomination for vice chair?
I'll nominate him.
Is there a second? Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to nominate Alan Stroh as vice chair. Any discussion? Please poll the committee.
Committee member Turley.
Yes.
Committee member McClooney.
Yes.
Committee member Mack.
Yes.
Committee member Andreessen.
Yes.
Committee member Copeland.
Yes.
Committee member Hatchett.
Yes.
Committee, committee member Storm, have you joined us? Okay, and Chair Brennan.
Yes.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you. Going on, are there any changes to the agenda?
There are not.
Thank you. And now's the time for comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Are there any public comments?
No comments received at the district office.
Thank you. The next is to accept and file a summary of actions for the advisory committee meeting of December 1. Is there, are there any comments? Seeing none, we will accept and file the summary. The next item is to receive a presentation and report on daily 8-hour peak ozone concentrations and PM 2.5 and PM 10 data. Bill, is that your report?
Yes, it is, Chairman Brennan. Hello, members of the board. I'm going to start the air monitoring summary for 2022. Let me just get it set up here. All right. And are you able to see it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Wait a second. There we go. Okay. all right. The Monterey Bay Resource District is responsible for North Central Coast Air Basin, which includes Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties. The district operates 7 permanent air monitoring stations year-round to meet the regional minimum air monitoring requirements established by the Environmental Protection Agency and the California Air Resources Board. These stations are located in San Lorenzo Valley, Santa Cruz, San Juan Bautista, Hollister, Salinas, Carmel Valley, and King City. National Park Service operates an ozone monitor in Pinnacles National Park, and that is to meet the EPA's visibility requirements for Class 1 airsheds. PM2.5 is monitored, which smoke is monitored at all stations except San Juan Bautista and Pinnacles. Ozone is monitored at all stations except San Lorenzo Valley and San Juan Bautista. And PM10, which is dust, is monitored only in Hollister, San Juan Bautista, and King City. Oops. Yes, sorry. There we go. Here are views of 2 of our current ambient air monitoring stations. All of our stations are currently standalone structures. In the past, we've also rented office spaces for small commercial buildings where we have set up air monitoring stations as well. Here we see the front and back sides of a gas analyzer rack found inside of most of our air monitoring stations. This is inside the Salinas station where we look at oxides of nitrogen, carbon monoxide, and ozone. Salinas is also the only station where we monitor NOx and carbon monoxide. The Partisol monitor on the right is an example of a PM2.5 monitor, and this is also found on the Salinas station roof. Okay, here we go. Pollution is a byproduct of human activities and natural events, and controls are in place to try to keep pollution within acceptable limits. These are set out in the state and federal ambient air quality standards as shown here. Attainment or non-attainment status for a regulatory agency is decided on whether pollutants in that agency's jurisdiction fall within these standards each calendar year. This year, in 2023, the EPA wants to change the annual PM2.5 standard, from an average of 12 micrograms per cubic meter to 10 micrograms per cubic meter. You see it in the little red parentheses under fine particulate matter 2.5. And it is currently undergoing a review process to do so. Monterey Bay Resources District is currently in attainment for both state and federal ozone standards, which include the 1-hour standard shown here and the 8-hour standard as well. District is also currently in attainment for PM2.5 at our regulatory stations. You can see one exceedance, which happened at Felton Cal Fire, I think it was on the 27th. So it was right around the Thanksgiving break. But that is not a regulatory monitor. That is one of our, that's part of our Clarity Network, which I'll bring up later. Okay. The Monterey Bay Air Resource District is currently a non-attainment for the state PM10 standards. This is our dust standards. The graph shows a typical annual cycle of exceedances of spring and summer, which are caused by wind-driven dust up the Salinas Valley. So as you can see, most of our exceedances are kind of towards the middle of the year, late spring to kind of mid-fall. There's a couple of spikes, one in early June, which I mentioned at the half year, and which likely came during a high wind event across the housing development near Fairview Road. I don't know if anyone's seen that, but it's a pretty big development going in. Okay. We have here a picture of our Clarity sensor. It's a low-cost sensor, which has its own battery and solar panel and a cellular connection. These sensors can be put up anywhere there's cellular service and can be set up and put into service in minutes. So they're very convenient monitors to use. And the district has a smoke monitoring network of 30 sensors in order to have a more extensive coverage, more rapid response to fire incidents than our 7-station regulatory network can provide. This allows us to see impacts of local fires in areas that might not be seen by the regulatory network. And that is it. Does anyone have any questions?
Are there questions from the committee? I guess not.
All right.
Seeing no questions, we'll move on to the next presentation, which is a presentation on calendar year 2022 engineering and compliance activities. Is that Amy?
Yes. Hello, good afternoon, members of the advisory committee. So today I'll just go through the activity data that was provided in the report with your agenda. And I'll just give a brief overview of some of the activities we do in engineering compliance and then show you some charts of that data. So in the engineering, we receive applications for permits and we make sure that before that equipment is given a permit to operate that it can meet all federal, state, and local regulations. And the permits are issued with operating conditions to ensure that they continue to meet those rules and regulations. We also, from time to time, will develop rules and regulations as needed. And then we also report annual emissions to the state for stationary sources. So this is just a snapshot of some of the data. I'll provide charts on the following slides. But in 2022, we just had a small number of ag engines and emission reduction credits issued. And then Title V permits are federal operating permits, and those cover an entire facility. Whereas we have also at those facilities, each individual piece of equipment, like an engine or a boiler, has a local district permit as well. And so in 2022, we actually added two new sources in the Title V program. And that was Monterey One Water and then Constellation Winery. So a lot of the work that the engineers do is processing permits. And this is just a diagram of the process. So we'll get an application. It's assigned to an engineer and they do their review to make sure that the rules and regulations can be met and what conditions need to be established. And so the first step is that we issue something called an authority to construct. And that gives the company authority to go and install the equipment. And then once it's installed and operating, they will schedule a startup inspection and the engineer will go out and make sure that the equipment installed matches what was on the application and evaluated. And then if that all goes smoothly, then we'll issue the permit to operate. So last year we received 308 permit applications. And as you can see in the pie chart, the majority of those were administrative amendments, emergency engines, miscellaneous, and vapor recovery. And so administrative amendments are change of ownerships. And so those go through a faster process because those are pieces of equipment that have already had a permit and they're just changing the owner. So we've already done the evaluation. So those go straight to a permit once we've received that application. But as you'll see, we also have a large percentage of emergency engines, and that's been pretty consistent over the past 3 years. More and more companies seem to be installing emergency engines. And so you'll see some places here what says application or modification, and that just means an application is something where we've never had that piece of equipment permitted at that location. And then a modification means they're just changing something about the equipment that's already there. So we're just modifying an existing permit. So in 2022, we issued 177 authorities to construct. And you can see the trend is, again, similar, where we have emergency engines, vapor recovery, and miscellaneous as the three main types. And I'll just also mention that vapor recovery typically means retail gas stations, but we also have like cities or counties that will have a gasoline tank with dispensing for their fleet. That also falls into that category. And then miscellaneous is could be fume hoods. We have cannabis oil extraction, concrete batch plants. It's kind of a catch-all for several different types of sources. And then in 2022, we did 163 startup inspections. Again, you'll see the majority of those were miscellaneous emergency engines and vapor recovery. And then finally, we issued 251 permits to operate. And this is where, again, we come back to that administrative amendment, and those are those change of ownership applications. So those were the majority of the permits, along with the miscellaneous emergency and vapor recovery. So once those permits are issued by engineering, they go over to our compliance staff, and our inspectors go out and conduct those inspections and make sure that the permitted sources are following their permit conditions. And as needed, they may need to take enforcement action and issue violations. And then we also have staff that enforce the federal asbestos regulation. And then we also respond to complaints. So last year we had a small increase in the number of compliance inspections compared to 2021. I will also mention we have both an open engineer and an inspector position, and both of those are on our website. So if you know anyone who is looking for a job to be an engineer or inspector, we'd love to have them apply. So we're keeping track as best we can of continuing to our inspections when we have fewer staff. We did get an increase in asbestos notifications last year. We did more asbestos inspections, and we received 21 breakdowns. And that's we have a rule that allows if some type of equipment breaks down, the company can call us within a certain time period and let us know, and they need to fix it within a certain time period, and then we won't issue them a violation. And the variance order is someone can request a hearing board to get coverage if they need to take some action where they may not be able to meet a permit condition. And then our inspectors went out and observed 22 source tests. So last year we received 239 complaints, and you can see here, by far odor is our number one thing we get complaints about, followed by smoke from either outdoor burning or chimneys, and then dust. And then I just wanted to describe a little bit, our inspectors issue something called a notice to comply or a notice of violation. And a notice to comply is typically for more administrative type of not following their permit condition. If they have a record keeping and their logbook's not kept current, those types of more administrative items get that notice to comply. As you can see, it's primarily permit conditions where people are having issues. And then notice of violation, there were 37 last year, and that's for something that's a clear violation of their permit condition. And we can't use any other means to determine whether or not they were in compliance. And when an inspector issues a notice of violation, it goes through our mutual settlement program. And that's where the penalties are assessed. And last year, we received approximately $120,000 in penalties through the program. And the majority of those were from private businesses. And I would say one of the types of sources that we've run into some problems with are gas stations. That's what the the blue part of that chart, there's several gas stations there. We have in asbestos, there were several issues with not notifying us of projects where regulated asbestos containing material was removed. And then finally, this is sort of just a high level summary of all the data in the past 10 years. And the top line of the chart shows there's been a continued slight increase in the total number of permits. And currently about 40% of our permits are for those emergency generators. The three lines at the bottom, the green, the purple, and the red, show that we have a stable workload of over the past 10 years of permit applications and number of permits we've issued and complaints. And then finally, the middle line is the blue dashed line is the number of compliance inspections. And that's really variable based on our inspector staffing. And inspectors typically complete about 300 to 400 inspections a year. And so as soon as you take away one of those, it can dramatically change the shape of that line. So again, we have open positions if anyone knows anyone who might be interested. And I'll just wrap up with we're hit our 1 year anniversary in our Acela database last year. We are doing our agricultural engine permit renewal fees in Acela. Our Title V permits and our emission reduction credits are run monthly to do the renewals out of Acela. And then 98% of our asbestos notifications and revisions are submitted with payment online. And just to note, I said we got, I think, 280 asbestos notifications. Well, we also received 400 revisions. And so we're getting more than one revision for every asbestos notification. So having this online system has really helped improve our efficiency because those used to just all come in through email. They're a little bit harder to track. So it's nice that we have the online system to handle those. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Are there questions? Amy, you more or less addressed the decline in compliance inspections. You indicated that's primarily related to the variability in staff. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll go on to the Air Pollution Control Officer's monthly report. It was distributed. And Richard, do you have comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be brief on this. First, I'll go over the goings on at our board meeting, and then I'll talk about district business. At the last board meeting, which was held on December 21st, last year, we recognized outgoing board members on the board of directors, and those are listed on your report there. Ryan Coonerty from supervisor, county supervisor from Santa Cruz, John Phillips, supervisor from Monterey County, and Sam Story, city council member from Capitola. I neglected to put Steve McShane is also going to be leaving the board of directors. He's a city council member from city of Salinas. We know that Justin Cummings, who's a supervisor in Santa Cruz, will be replacing Ryan. Newly elected Glenn Church will be replacing John Phillips. We don't have a substitute for Sam Story as of yet, but for Steve McShane, we will be getting city council member Orlando Orsonio from city of Salinas. Also, at the end of the year, we always take time out to recognize longevity milestones for district staff. And you can see a listing here. But if you add up the number of years we have here in experience, it's quite formidable. So it was really great to be able to recognize those folks. And we have one relatively small number of years who is also recognized. That's our first breakpoint for recognition. The board also acted to approve a contract for the office roof replacement here at the district. We went out and performed a request for proposal and had several bids submitted. And we got it wrong by about half. I had put in the budget, we thought it'd be about $200,000. It's probably going to be over twice that to get a new roof on this building. But as I look, I just noticed I've got a big spot over my head. I didn't experience any dripping, but this is the original roof, tar and gravel, and it's shot. And we've been chasing leaks for the past 10 years. So it'll be really nice to have the building buttoned up. We also had a presentation from our district council on AB 361 and on the status of future remote meetings. And as Janet said earlier, they are not going to happen any longer. Once the governor rescinds the emergency proclamation, we expect the county health officer to follow suit and not require social distancing at public meetings. So there are ways that you can participate remotely, but let me just say they are very difficult to comply with. So if you're really interested in that, please come talk to me. But it basically, you have to notice why and where, and it has to be approved by the full board. So it's for all intents and purposes, we will be back at the district at our appointed time to meet in person. As I said earlier, though, we hope to have a hybrid capability where we would, and it's not really an issue with this body because we don't really have too many people participating anyways. For the public, but we will have open lines of communication with the public via Zoom. We have an OWL set up that we've just enhanced and improved. So hopefully that will go smoothly, but that's not always the case. If you have any questions, please get in touch with me. Also, the board received the results of our latest financial audit. It was, we passed with flying colors, no findings. So another clean audit under our belt, and we're going to start getting ready for next year's audit as we start to build the budget again for next year, which is we're going to be doing really shortly here. With respect to district business, we had a retirement, and that was Laura Sint. She was our senior fiscal assistant. She left in sort of mid-December. She was responsible for accounts payable, payroll, and other duties. And before MBAR, just note, worth noting, she was an office assistant and elected city clerk for the city of San Juan Bautista. So we'll be recruiting. We actually brought in temporary help, and that person had to go out on medical. So we're going to be recruiting. So if you know somebody that has really good experience with accounts payable, payroll, and those type of accounting duties, please send them our way. You'll see this as a theme throughout my report, and Amy already mentioned we're recruiting for engineers. We've got a lot of open positions, and we're not getting a lot of response. And this is also something that other air districts, indeed other employers throughout the country, are experiencing at the moment. In engineering compliance, we issued two notices for public comment on permit modifications for boilers. And that's just get comments before the permit can be issued. So those are available on our website. And I think Amy could let you know what the status is of those. We'll be recruiting for, as Amy said, a new engineer inspector this year. So once again, if you know somebody who might be interested, please let us know. And this data is a little stale, but we've received 11 odor complaints from marina residents. And this is sort of the time we receive odor complaints. I can tell you that the city of Marina is undertaking an odor attribution study right now. It's a little wonky and in our opinion, maybe not going to really prove to be that useful, but they're doing something, I suppose, about it. But it's a very difficult situation to try to find the source of odors in an area that has a landfill, a wastewater treatment plant, agriculture, and composting, and previously open digesters. And then there's a new biochar facility that may try to be sited out at the landfill as well. So lots of sources of pollution, odor specifically, that is very subjective in nature and really difficult to pin down. So we wish them all the best. We've been coordinating as sort of the receptacle for all complaints, and we forward that on to all the interested parties. Even though we have a lot of openings, we did manage to fill a couple of positions, and these are in our planning department. And Eli Lessman and Michelle Kaiser are new employees, and we're really really grateful to have these folks. Eli has an MS in toxicology and environmental health science from Columbia University, and a BS in biology from Brooklyn College. And he's done a lot of work in it as an environmental scientist and safety program for produce. And he worked with California Department of Food and Agriculture. Michelle started working as air monitoring specialist in December. She was at the aquarium. She actually got paid to scuba dive and play with fish. So I wondered why she was coming here, because that sounds like the ideal job. But she's got a lot of really great experience and a really an excellent attitude. And we're very fortunate to have her here. So you can see her experience listed there. Our vehicle incentive program has closed. And so this is also a little bit stale as far as the numbers. I'm sure we're actually through that 4,000 or so that was remained. So we're going to fire up that program again. That will be built into our next budget, and we'll see what the board's tolerance is. There may be some legislation running that would up the amount of essentially tax for vehicle registration, where we get the money to run the electric vehicle incentive program. So if we get additional dollars, we may be able to grow that program, which would be really great. That's also where our electric bicycle incentive program resides. And then speaking of other programs, we have the diesel engine and equipment replacement program, DERP for short. And so we already had a kickoff meeting here. We had about 40 people, 30 showed up on Zoom, and about 10 people came to the office. And we were able to let them know specifics about our program, which funds marine vessel tractors and other off-road equipment with repowers or new vehicles that are cleaner burning models. So application for that program applications will be accepted until March 24th. So we're continuing to observe weather conditions and air quality in the San Lorenzo Valley, so that we can forecast when a spare the air alert can be declared. During this time, we would ask residents to voluntarily choose to use fuels other than wood to heat their homes. And so far, we haven't had any spare the air alerts. The meteorology has been pretty cooperative. That's not to say that we don't get complaints. We do get complaints, a lot of complaints, especially regarding fireplaces and wood stoves. And these don't show up in our monitors typically. Even our sensor network might not show it. That's very dependent. It's very neighborhood scale. And obviously, we can't have a sensor in everybody's home. But some people are impacted, and we typically take an approach of education. We'll send out a letter to the offending party and just let them know about ways to burn and so forth, so that they do not cause a nuisance or smoke conditions that will adversely impact the neighbors or neighborhood. We also are going to be receiving a $30,000 grant from the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association to develop clean air centers in our region. Basically, these are filters that will be placed in evacuation centers. So if there is a wildfire, like you remember back the Soberanis fire and numerous other fires up in Santa Cruz and up the state and indeed the West Coast, there were very few places that had good air quality, and that included a number of evacuation centers. So we will be working with the Office of Emergency Services, and we've got Breathe California to actually help run this program. So we're just basically handling we'll be handing off the air filtration devices to Breathe California and OES, and they'll be storing those that will be made available during emergency episodes of wildfire smoke. Okay, outreach, we've been really busy. As I said, we announced our Spare the Air program, and there's a lot on our website as well as social media. And then Siri did a great thing by creating a new website page about cleaning, clean burning wood. So don't burn wood that's dirty or wet. Controlling the fuel in a stove is probably almost or maybe more important than the stove itself. So if people start realizing that burning wet wood is not only inefficient, you have to burn more of it to heat the home, but it also causes a lot of pollution and creosote buildup inside the chimney. It's just not a good way to go. So we try to get that word out to folks, and hopefully that will have an impact. As I mentioned, we had the January 11th workshop on the DERP program, or DERP. So that actually went really well. And I don't know if David's there. I don't know how much money we have this year available for that. It's 1.4 million around there,
So 1.4 in CAP, all right, sorry, farmer program, and about the same in lawyer.
We're currently working, the farmer program is a change out program for cleaner burning agricultural equipment and devices. And the state, the budget got zeroed out this year, so there's no money available. So we're currently working through CAPCOA to have those funds reestablished. But you guys may have heard that California is in dire straits with respect to budget. Some people are projecting a $22 billion shortfall. And of course, there's also the doom and gloom about a recession coming. Although I just saw study out of UC San Diego this morning that said we will not be seeing a recession in California. It might be a minor blip, but so that's good news. But you know, predicting financials is sort of like the weather. So it could be accurate, but maybe not. We've been doing a lot of work advertising. In fact, I'll be doing an on-air interview pretty soon on KPIG, and that will be concentrating on wood burning as well as backyard burning. We have our latest version of our electronic newsletter that was published in January, available on our website. And then once again, staff got together with Siri, and we've created a new flyer about storm cleanup information. And this is a lot of people have debris, and there's really a drive to burn this stuff. Fire departments want to see it burned. And then we also, with buildings that have been damaged by storms, we have a lot of concern about asbestos and demolition activities that will be taking place as a result. So we don't want to be a hindrance or overly bureaucratic about it, but we want to make sure public health is protected if folks are going to do remodeling or any kind of work on their structures. And then lastly, with sad news, our former air pollution control officer, my predecessor, passed away not too long ago. And in memory, we've planted a tree in front of our building, and we will be putting a plaque under the tree to acknowledge his contribution to the agency in passing. So that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, any suggestions for future agenda items? Seeing none, I was going to note the passing of Doug Queaton, which was quite a surprise. For some of us, he was still a young man, and he worked for the district for 20 years. So that was sad news. Are there comments from committee members? If not, we will adjourn the meeting. And thank you for attending. And the next meeting, we'll see you all in person. Most of you, anyway. Thank you.
Thank you.